It's July 9th to the 8th. Can we just make a compilation of every time I fucked up the date over the 34 episodes?
Oh my god.
It's July 8th, 2009.
And this is
Idle Thumbs 30.
Oh, man, beat me to it. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
I'm Jake Rodkin.
Great. Well, we've somehow managed to start this episode against all odds.
Yeah.
And we're here to talk about video games.
We love video games.
We do.
I hate video games.
Yeah.
It's Nick's turn this week. Role usually occupied by me, now taken by Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you probably love video games the most today.
I do.
You guys just launched one.
I launched a video game, so I love video games.
Yeah, good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Sweet. That means I've played zero video games. Actually, I've probably played negative video games.
Yeah.
I've destroyed some copies of games that I own.
Oh, man.
They imploded due to just neglect.
Right. Yeah. Due to sort of willful neglect and sort of extreme neglect.
Yeah. I come home and just glare at the games that I own until they sort of
they
shrivel
They wither
up.
In shame.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah. Nope. I don't know what we're talking about. No. You guys have been playing them, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nick, did you play through Trine? Jake, have you played Trine at all?
No.
I haven't finished it yet. I'm sort of savoring it.
I finished it today. I made sure to finish it before we recorded.
Trine, savor it.
Yeah. That is honestly good advice for that game. I really actually would recommend not just blowing through that game.
Yeah.
It's absolutely one of the best design games I've played in a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty
incredible.
Solid.
I mean, it's a great game. And unfortunately, the last level is bullshit.
Everybody I talk to with this about this game is saying the same thing.
It's bullshit. It's the kind of thing where it honestly, genuinely makes me angry at the developers because I'm just like, how can you do this? How can you make a game that is so great where the whole time I'm thinking nothing but this is awesome. This
it
is
just wouldn't be rewarding if the end wasn't a huge challenge. What, you'd just be like, what, the game's over? I didn't even have to try.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of wonder if part of it is like that they just
it's the zen
didn't
of
feel
trying.
Comfortable, like didn't feel comfortable just having the last level just be one more level of the thing they've been doing for eight levels or however long. I don't know how long that game is. You know, however
kinda
long
made
it is.
Special,
right. And it's horrible. It's never a good idea. I mean, the reason your other game levels are so good is because you've been iterating on that design and that style of gameplay again and again and again to the point where it's sharpened to an incredible point. And then
that point is just going through the pants apparently in this game.
Exactly. It's just all of a sudden it's just like, oh, we've decided this level is going to be sort of a rolling like timed level where there's an enemy constantly throwing things in your way. And if you stop for more than a few seconds, you die. And
that sucks because when that sort of thing happens, you, at least in my experience, when I end up finally getting through a game like that, like through that last level, it's so much less of an enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
I beat the last goddamn level of that.
Right. Yeah. I'm more just doing it out of spite at that point to finish. And it bothers me because I had that exact experience where after I finished it, I genuinely was less excited even about all the rest of the game. And that really, that's the part that actually makes me angry at the developers because I'm like, you guys seriously made one of the most enjoyable game experiences I've had in a long time. And you basically are guaranteeing that my memory of this game is going to be less positive than it otherwise would have been if you simply had shipped this game without a last level. If this game had just ended out of nowhere, it would have been weird and annoying, but it would not have made me angry at your gameplay, which is what is most important in a game like this.
Well, I think the mistake is in thinking that it has to be difficult.
Or exactly.
More difficult.
More difficult.
It's that boss mentality.
Because the game actually gets fairly challenging.
Yeah. It's not an easy game necessarily, but it...
With games like that, I often like when the final level of it is just sort of a longer version of what the previous experience was, or just has more callbacks to when this was the
primary
type of gameplay.
Exactly.
We're bringing that back for this part. And then the second part, so you just
sort of like a collage.
Yeah.
Like a little like,
anything that just sort of feels like, all right,
best of
now is when
an
you
overture.
Get it.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, some people really don't seem to like that, but I do just kind of like, remember all these things or just
a clip show.
We're going to give you a chance to just sort of like use all the skills that you've learned right, and make exactly. you feel like a badass, right. but it's not
like a cool obstacle course that puts together everything.
Yeah, but it's not going to just murder you and make right. you want to die.
Well, and it's not going to just take a stab in the dark at some totally different gameplay style. I mean, that's really what does it. I mean,
it's too bad.
But, you know, it's terrible, and it really irritates me. And I really, you know, I think it's important for me to put that aside for a second and say, you really still need to buy this game if you haven't bought it.
Yeah, fortunately, Trine seems to be super amazingly
awesome. If you just played this game and just stopped at the second to last level, it would be one of the coolest, most inventive, clever, polished,
I do that with games a lot of the time anyway, so maybe I should
stop. Yeah, I know, same here.
You know what I mean?
Like, there's so many games I've gotten to the last level and given up because it's stupid. Yeah. I should have done it. But I was enjoying this game so much that I didn't want to. I'm like, right. I don't want it to be over. I want to
I hadn't actually thought about that, and then I just, like, five games just popped into my mind where right. my save game is literally like the last level. Even shit like New Super Mario Bros. Yeah. Like
really?
8-4 or whatever the last one is where I stopped.
Yeah. Somebody asked me the other day if I beat God of War just in some random conversation, and I was like, well, what's the ending? And he was like, well, you hug your family and all this stuff. And I was like, what? You hug your family? No, I didn't beat it. I stopped just before the end. I apparently see the family reunion.
That's funny. Yeah. Was it because can you remember why?
I think I just lost interest or something.
Oh, really?
You know, I know I got, you know, right down to the end.
Yeah. Because, I mean, for me in trying, there was definitely...
I probably hit a wall, I'm sure. I mean, that happens to me a lot where I'll lose once, and I've played enough of the game where, you know, I don't feel like I'm enjoying it to the point where it's worth it.
Right. When it gets to the point where you're just sort of at the sort of mad fever pitch of, like, blasting through that shit at the end, and you're just destroying the game, but it's like, I'm fucking good at this, and also I'm at the point where my skills plus what the game is demanding of me is actually starting to become mentally taxing on me, but then when it's like, and fuck you, actually you well, I'm an adult, so I think that I've had
just
enough
to go
of
over
you,
here
actually.
And read a book.
Exactly,
which is too bad, but
well, and at this point, I don't really assume that the ending to the game is going to be worth that pain.
No, it never is.
It rarely is.
It almost never is. It's funny because I've had that experience so many times. Trine is one of the only examples I can think of a game where, before I got to the end level, but as I could tell, the game was clearly coming to. I'm sorry, approaching the end. I really genuinely had that feeling where when you're reading a book and, you know, the page, the part of the book that your right hand holds starts getting thinner and thinner and thinner.
Right.
If it's a really great book and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. This is clearly going to be over within like an hour's worth of reading. And that sucks. Like, you guys surely know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's a very cliche thing, but I mean, it's real. You know, I mean, there's definitely a real thing that can happen. And Trine was one of the only examples I can ever think of playing a game where I genuinely felt that. And I was genuinely I probably played through the first half of the game in like a day, and it was like an inverse log curve. It was like the farther I got, the slower my pace was, because I really didn't want this game to end. I was enjoying it so much.
The smaller Valve downloadable offerings actually made me feel like that. Half-Life 2 Episode 1 and 2 and Portal were all like, you could sort of feel the story coming to a head.
Right.
Man.
And you know it's going to be like a year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah, it's like, this is gone, and I'm not getting another one of these for a long time.
Yeah.
With Portal was like that a lot, where it's just like, oh man, you break out of the facility, and it's like, this is great. There's a huge amount of game. Wait, I can feel it whittling down.
Right.
Damn it.
Yeah.
And you know what's funny is that I never feel that way about the really long games, and I think that's not a coincidence. I think the fact that they are shorter is why the quality is – no, I shouldn't say why. Is one reason the density is so much better and the quality is so much better is that they're spending more time refining
I think you can just feel the arc of the game more.
That's true. Yeah.
When there's like a maximum of 3 or 4 gameplay sessions, you can remember every
step along the way.
Happening.
Yeah,
it's totally
true.
When it's like, I remember back
2 months ago
when I started playing this game.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you're totally correct.
But I mean, yeah, I can hold the entire arc to each Half-Life episode or Portal in my mind so much more than the entire arc of Half-Life or Half-Life 2, for instance. Just to use all the Valve games as examples.
And you know, I'll still most cases take that over a game that I just get bored of 40 hours in and stop playing. I mean, I finish such a small percentage of games that I play that being able to have that arc in a game that I think is truly great is a very valuable memory and experience for me because I don't have time to do that for every game. And so when I can play through a Portal or an episode two and have that whole experience in my mind, it's great. And then that's what's so frustrating about Trine is it's like they've stymied me from having that full 100%.
They snuck in the last level from the 60-hour Trine.
Right, exactly, yeah. Right. It's yeah, exactly. It's the Psychonauts meat circus of Trine.
It is.
It's basically that. But I do want to say that everything up till that point in this game is truly great. It's people keep describing this game as a puzzle game or like a puzzle platformer. I wouldn't phrase it that way. I've seen some criticism from people on forums and the like saying, well, I don't puzzle game. These puzzles aren't hard. And it's not actually, I think it's unfair to call it a puzzle game. Not that I think the genre matters. I don't know what genre this is, but I don't care. But I do think that it's not a puzzle game. I mean, the challenge is not how do you solve this puzzle? The challenge is how do you play this game? I mean, there's so many instances where you can get past an area by stacking boxes with a wizard, especially once you upgrade his spells and can make multiple boxes and ramps and like triangle floats and things and like floating floats. Or you can swing with the what's her face's the thief's grappling hook, like, or you can pile shit up with the wizard. The
wizard, or you can use the
right. Or you can use the wizard, the wizard. You could use the wizard alternatively, but I mean, they're just and with combat, there are so many options too. I mean, all three characters have ways of taking out enemies. Some of them are cumbersome, like the wizard. You can just drop things you make on them, but sometimes that's just hilarious. I mean, sometimes it's great, especially you have the platform one and you can crush like four guys simultaneously. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And there are so many amazing.
It's good that it's a physics wizard, also.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it basically makes this game wizard. Much more about kind of the using physics to propel you through the game. Like that's basically what Trine's all about to me. It's a kinetic game. It's like. To me,
yeah,
this
I wouldn't
game
call
is,
Little Big Planet a puzzle game.
No,
in any
it's
sense.
Similar to Little Big Planet in that sense.
Yeah.
A little more directed, obviously, than Little Big Planet.
Yeah.
Well, in some ways, because you have different characters with different powers, which obviously Little Big Planet doesn't have. So you have more choice about what your characters do, but obviously there's no level creation or anything like that.
Right, yeah. But I mean, the pre-built levels in Little Big Planet are totally just about you will follow the predetermined route of the developer and not.
Right.
How will you get around this obstacle? It's like you will get around it by finding the lever that drops.
Exactly,
the vine.
Right. They're completely prescripted. There's in fact only one. This is actually a credit to the developers that there was really only one instance that I can remember in trying. It was actually very early. It happened in the demo portion where I felt I should be able to do something based on the physics engine and the game wanted me to do it the developer's way. That was only one time I felt that. That's so rare in a game like this. In pretty much every other instance, I was always able to approach a sort of physics situation in just a way that made sense and the physics engine would allow for what I wanted to do, which is, I think, a pretty amazing achievement in a genre that isn't usually – that has very few, relatively few examples of this kind of gameplay. But I also wanted to compare it to Portal in that Portal is more of a puzzle game than this is, but one of the sort of supreme joys I got out of Portal was purely the kinetic aspect, was when you get really fluid with the Portal gun and the mechanics, the movement mechanics of the game, it's not just that you're getting enjoyment out of how do I create a portal that allow me to get to that platform and put this button down.
Yeah, it's the actual feeling of just like whooshing around
exactly.
in the world.
And being able to place the portal so that right as you fall through it and shoot through.
Yeah.
That's what surprised me about this game. When I played the demo initially, I did not expect
I didn't either.
For whatever reason. I mean, you can see it in the trailers, but it doesn't really
you don't
hit
get
home
a sense
until
it,
you, yeah. you're actually going
that,
through
that
it.
That kind
you sort
of gameplay
is
like that, though.
Yeah.
When it's really good, you could never get a sense of it just by watching it. I mean, you've got to play it.
Yeah. Well, because you assume it's scripted or it's been sort of, you know.
Right. You assume it's got sort of the scripted jump where you jump the same way every time. Or and it's, there's some amazing things you can do in Trine. Really amazing. I mean, you know, I've just had, when you start to get a really strong facility with the controls and the inputs, and I played it with a keyboard, so I, you know, specifically, you know, like pressing 1, 2, 3 for the different characters aiming the mouse to shoot the grappling hook, and that stuff starts to come together in a really incredible way. You know, where you create a platform with the wizard, you switch to the thief, you shoot up to the plot. You can create a platform at one point that allows you to attach a grappling hook to it. Shoot the grappling hook up there, swing over like a wall of spikes or something, and then on your way down. An enemy spawns like on the platform you're jumping onto, and then in midair you switch to the warrior and then execute his downward strike attack so that as you land, you kill the guy. Like, it's just, you can link together the most amazing shit in this game in the most split second, like instinctual way once you know what you're doing. I mean, it's just, it's an incredible feeling. It's one of those games where a lot of the pleasure simply comes from how it feels to just move around its world and command the characters. And having those three characters instantaneously switchable is really cool. And I've heard the co-op is fun, but part of the enjoyment for me really derives out of me personally having complete control. Yeah,
just switching game modes on the fly.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really amazing. I mean, and the levels are designed brilliantly in that respect. Yeah. I mean, they're kind of just enough freedom to let you do that kind of thing, but not so much that you're ever really standing around not sure how to get any further. Mm-hmm. And it's especially because you have a choice as to which powers you upgrade in what order based on your experience. You can really end up going in different areas. I mean, you know, you can either start making more platforms with the wizard, start making more boxes. You can, there's a crazy platform you can create that hovers in the air with the wizard later in the game, which I totally thought would break the game. I thought it would just be way too easy to just make that thing wherever you want. And you can use the wizard's levitate spell to drag it around with you on it, which seems like it should be able to just take you anywhere you want at all times. But there are some really clever, very natural feeling limitations built in, and they just step up the level design to a way crazier extreme at that point. That is way more complex than anything you've seen earlier.
Oh, you can just float wherever you want? Fine.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. It's awesome. I was so impressed because I actually didn't want to have that power because it's like once the game lets you do that, you're going to take advantage of it. You know what I mean? And I wished the game wasn't giving me that ability because it makes it so much easier to get to higher places and things. And then they just really introduced this whole other style of level. And it just, it's amazing. It's a great game.
It's always a really enjoyable feeling when something like that shows up and it's like, you can tell the developer has two choices at that point. One, to sort of hamper the functionality of that device, or two, to just completely step up their game and make it awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, where it's like, you know, in the meeting where it's like, we want the wizard to be able to spawn a thing where it just floats and he can drag it around. And people are like, you know, that's going to suck. And then it's like, well, or it could just make us make phase two of the game that much more hardcore.
And in other games, that would be like the last level where it just sort of goes bonkers,
it's close to the last level in this game,
but it's fine.
I mean, it's like the second or third to last
level. I'm always so excited, just like not even that exact example or like things only one step away from that, but just in general, when something shows up in a game and then you see it and then it's like, oh man, oh, thank you for ruling.
It's almost like, I mean, it's not the same example because you don't, because these are, you know, these didn't change the character of the game as much as this does necessarily, but it reminds me very much of escaping from GLaDOS and Portal or getting the super gravity gun.
That's what
in Half-Life 2, you know, where it's
but
like, on. You know what I mean? It's like at those moments, it's completely changes your perception of the game. I don't know if Trine's a little different. It's
more gameplay based.
It's less atmospheric.
Yeah, your brain sort of goes boop and rotates 30 degrees, sort of how it perceives what's going on. I love stuff like that so
much. It's great. And I just feel like the underlying core design behind Trine is just so incredibly strong. It's just, I really didn't actually expect the game to be this good. I thought it was going to be a good sort of fun, you know, third person platformer.
We've
thing.
Definitely it's, talked it up over the last 2 weeks.
I know,
so
but I'm so
to play it.
I'm so glad that it actually deserves it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Like, yeah, especially while the demo was scary for me because I liked it so much. I wasn't sure if that amount of, you know, that quality would be carried through the whole way.
And you know what was fun? What was cool? One of the best.
You know what was fun?
You know what was a pleasant experience?
That's really
fun. You know what was really cool is that the first when I got the full game, you know, and I started playing through that. Yeah. One of the coolest moments was actually playing through that demo section again and just fucking tearing ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like being, I was
gross.
Just like, yeah, I was, it was
actually,
horrible moment. No, but
I had the opposite.
Really?
I did a really dumb thing where I had the demo and the full version both on my Steam list, and they both say like play Trine, and I clicked on the demo, and so
the Steam, you got the non-Steam version?
No, I did. I got the Steam
play
version.
Trine is what it says when you put the shortcut.
The
in.
Demo was non Steam or whatever, so it just said play Trine, and then there was, I guess there was Trine, And so anyway, I was playing the demo and I thought it was the full game. And so I played all the way through the demo, got to the end, it was like nothing. And right. I had to go back and
that sucks.
That, that sucks. Yes. But yeah, anyway,
That's another just thing that I really like about games like that. Like I played the, I mean, sure, you also probably played a lot of Mario Galaxy and possibly Sunshine.
Right. Yeah. Not as much of Sunshine, okay, but yeah.
Those games are that same sort of style of sort of kinetic gameplay that you sort of gain an amount of finesse and dexterity with, and then when you sort of stumble upon something that you should have completed 4 hours earlier in the game, and you're just like,
right.
You just wreck it. It's I love that. Yeah. I love video games.
Sometimes they're really good. I've had like seriously the best 2 weeks of gaming recently that I've had in a long goddamn time.
That's like the opposite of my life.
I know. I'm sorry.
I've had 2 weeks of not sleeping and going completely insane.
Well, you ship the game, so you can play other games now that aren't yours.
I might.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
I can't wait to
try.
Trine
is like the most joyous experience. I mean, it's just so, you know what I mean? It's like, it's not, it's relatively short. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to, it's not intimidating in length. It's not, it's sort of difficult, but it's not at all like a crazy, you know, brick wall kind of thing where you're ever going to be out of place just in frustration, except for the last level, which is that. But, you know, it's just a great experience. It's one of those times where I seriously, it's the cheesiest fucking thing, but I'm sitting there playing this game and I'm like, man, video games are awesome. I mean, it was just, I haven't had that in a while.
So here's a question.
Yeah.
If someone is listening to this podcast and they really don't care about Trine, do you think they will, do you think they'll be frustrated that in iTunes they've gone, get it, Trine.
That's the Far Cry 2 effect. We're very well familiar with this.
We're 20 minutes into this thing and we've only talked about Trine. All right.
Video games are great because of Trine.
Yeah. Right.
All the other ones are dumb.
Let's just keep sort of mentioning Trine.
Right. Yeah. Every like 20 minutes.
Yeah. Just so that if someone is scrubbing through this episode and doesn't want to hear about it, they'll just throw the whole episode out because they'll think we talked about Trine the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, has anyone been playing anything other than the amazing Trine?
Yeah. Nick, you've been playing a lot. Oh my God, it was hilarious, actually. I got home from work today and I loaded up some King's Bounty because that game has been dominating my fucking life and it's amazing. And anyway, but you know, I live where we record the podcast, so whatever. And so I'm playing and then the little right corner, Steam notification thing pops up and it's like Nick Brecken has launched Civilization 4 and I'm like, oh, what the fuck? what are you gonna come over here at any point? You gonna load up the fucking life destroying game now?
Yeah, sorry.
The one that takes 18 hours to fucking play a campaign?
Be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah. It was funny. So you wanna use that as a launch point to talk
about? It's
funny,
I was gonna talk about Call of Juarez, but
oh, okay, well we can get back to that.
I wanna go back to Civ after the break because
so Call of Juarez.
But I played a little bit of that game. I don't know. I played some of the
I played like 10 seconds of it today.
Yeah,
watched you play 10 seconds of it today.
Yeah. I don't know. I played a little bit of the first game. And I really didn't know what to expect here.
You didn't know what to expect after that or from the first game?
After that. Because I wasn't a huge fan of the first game.
Sure, yeah. I heard it.
Yeah. I don't know. I a lot of people are really liking this game, but I don't really see it. For people who don't know, it's a Western shooter, and it starts out in the Civil War. And I hate to be like...
You're a Confederate soldier, which is really
You're a Confederate soldier, which... It's interesting until you find out that you're a Confederate soldier asshole who...
Oh, really?
Like, well, I mean, you're just this guy. It's
that,
basically...
That could have a lot of horrible implications.
You and your
you
brother...
Do you want to qualify that?
Well, you and your brother... Well, there are lines and they're like, kill those Yanks, those bastards.
Well, okay, but they're your enemy. That's fine. I mean, are you like a plantation owner with slaves? Like, that would be... A little worse than kill the enemy.
Oh no!
Who we're fighting? Like
no. I not that I've seen. It those are the two opening levels, and then it switches into sort of like Western mode. You know, I mean, like it's just sort of
like you're scandalized by a Confederate soldier saying kill those Yankees.
Well, no, they do it. Listen, okay. Here's my problem with this game.
I would imagine that would be what. Well, look,
they were all right. They're the Cain of Lynch, Cain and Lynch of like Western.
The Cain of Lynch.
It's the Cain of Lynch. Jesus Christ. Anyway, I don't like this game very much, and here's why.
you really don't think it's good?
No. I appreciate what they're trying to do. I like the idea of Western games.
Yeah.
I'm always very open to historical games, and I like the fact that they're you know, they said it, you know, they're doing that Civil War intro. That appeals to me.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day,
as a Confederate sympathizer,
yeah, right, yeah, you know,
yeah, I know how much you hate the War of Northern Aggression.
but yeah, no, in the first, I don't want to, maybe in the first 5 minutes, you know, I'm going along. I got my little pistols. And, you know, I mean, the game does make some interesting choices. I like the fact that you move slower, that it's a slower paced shooter, that,
sure,
that it, you know, they're trying to provide some weight to it, which is what a Western really kind of should feel like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are all these sort of strange, like, modern shooter mechanics in there that just come out of nowhere, like
combo chains.
Yeah, well, there's a bullet time thing where you, you hit a button and you move the cursor around.
I love it. I love it when one of us tries to bust out an extreme joke and then the other person, well, actually, there's bullet time. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I wasn't okay.
Yeah.
Sweet bullet time. Wait, did you say that you move out, you bring out the mouse and like, is this like Wanted? Can you like, it's bullet time with curve control?
An ordinary mouse is transformed into an amazing motion control device with Call of Juarez.
Basically, the way it works is
Cyborg.
You hit Z, the cursor, you know, everything slows down. You sort of have a floaty cursor, and the cursor moves around, and every guy that the cursor touches is then marked. And then when that sort of sequence is over and everything goes back to full time, it just speeds forward, and you shoot like 10 guys at once, right?
That's not bullet time. That's just like, well, it's auto target.
It's like simulating.
It's sort of like a John Wayne
kind of
thing where he comes out and
you get the Spider-Man movie sort of Spidey sense thing.
That's one thing. It's
like red.
It's fine. and then after that, there's a sequence where there are, you know, all these Union soldiers coming at you. And wouldn't you know it, that, you know, the way you deal with these guys is you jump on a goddamn turret. Now, I don't know. I don't understand. Well, there was this game, and then there was another recent game that had a turret that I was just blown away by how they could wedge a turret into this, like, historical game, or it was just, it made no sense. But this game,
at least as a crank.
Yeah, it's like the first version of a Gatling gun. But
they set this game just in time to allow for a historical turret sequence.
Well, technically, they were introduced at the very end of the Civil War, but they were never put in service.
I'm really glad that you know this.
Well, I looked it up, actually.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
you were offended by a turret.
This is the kind of information
I knew it shouldn't have been there. I mean, like, that was not something that you just run across. But okay, so there was one. I was like, all right, you know, maybe that was like the prototype that just happened to be there.
Yeah.
There are like turrets in like the first, they're like 16 fucking turrets. and then after that, there was you come across like a cannon, like a goddamn artillery piece. And as you're firing the cannon, I'm probably blowing out the mic. Okay. As you're firing the cannon, it recharges like every 2 seconds. Like
the camera pans back and it's actually a Gatling cannon.
That's what it's like. It's amazing. And I'm not one of those people who, you know, really cares that much about a couple of historical inaccuracies.
You prefer, like, the four NPCs rearming it for you every time and stuff?
Wait, weren't you the guy who complained about... Oh, no, you were discussing other people talking about the weird, like, specifics of infantry in Empire Total War.
There are degrees of how to take that. Now, it wouldn't be offensive to me if I think the alternative would have been more interesting. There are so many goddamn guys shooting at you in this game. It's basically like a Doom game. I mean, there are just like a million soldiers. And
so why not make you a super soldier?
Well, you basically are. I mean, you can shoot like 20
guys. Like the Wolfenstein of the Civil War?
Yeah, General Lee.
Wolfenstein took World War II into a crazy supernatural direction.
Like a mechanical General Sherman
Civil War.
Coming through Atlanta, like riding a steel horse in a tank. Like... No, yeah.
A steel horse in a tank?
Well, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
You thought that was a metaphor.
You haven't seen the concept art for Call of Juarez.
You haven't seen the real Civil War. That's how those alternative reality or alternative
steampunk
fiction
or whatever,
or like history things are like, this is what the real Victorian era, like the real world behind the history books is this crazy robot.
So. Well, yeah. And there are other things like they basically sub in packs of dynamite as grenades. And so you're just chucking like dynamite at people. Just you've got six satchels of dynamite and you're just throwing them out
like
everywhere.
The demo man and
other soldiers are throwing those at you. Yeah. Like they got
so
just,
this
like,
is basically Call of Duty / Juarez.
You
don't,
yes.
You don't remember the Civil War when people just threw sticks of dynamite at each other?
Juarez of Duty.
It's like that. But all right. The real problem I have with it, though, is that there is so many dudes, so many enemies.
And
there is a total sausage fest.
What I didn't like is there is so many dudes.
There are, all right.
There be so many dudes in this call.
Hey, Nick. I'm enjoying everything you're saying.
Okay. I'm very passionate about.
Yeah, you, man, I didn't actually totally didn't expect
historical accuracy.
Before, when I was playing a few seconds of Call of Juarez, Nick was like, I can't hold back from talking about this.
I know, but
before the podcast,
you were like, I don't like that voice actor in the prologue.
Oh, God, the fucking
but then
voice
it's like,
acting.
I don't like the audio compression. And now you're like, there weren't Gatling guns in the Civil War. Like, whoa, different plane of complaint than I was expecting going into this.
Well, yeah, that brings me to my other point. The voice compression is awful. I mean, it just sounds terrible. I don't understand. What it sounds just tinny, like 28 kilobyte, you know, iPod compression from 1999. It's just awful.
I'm not really allowed to join in this conversation.
But yeah, all right. But getting beyond that, as far as a gameplay decision goes, having that many guys, having that many enemies, just doesn't make any sense to me. Because what I want in a Western shooter,
it's also not what Westerns are about.
Is exactly now. Once you get to the Western part, the first Western scene starts out with a duel, which I thought was kind of
okay,
cool. It's
cool.
Sort of like an interesting duel mechanic where you keep your hand close to your thing, and then
any Pixelante game? The you know what I'm talking about?
No,
want to talk about that for a second? No,
or is it Ananthropy? God, who is it that makes those little pixel indie games? And whatever. I'm fucking this up. Continue talking.
It's just like
that.
Well,
she made a Western game with a quick draw mechanic that's probably similar to this.
Okay, well, it's fine. And then, so I do the draw, and then, you know, the rest of the town's like, oh my god, kill the sheriff, get him! And there are like 50...
Like, I didn't know that guy was the sheriff.
Yeah. Kill the who? But then there's like literally an army of guys. Just
the whole town.
It's literally like the whole town.
Like
yeah,
horde just comes
blues,
screaming
the blues
around.
Blues Brothers of
yeah,
the
right.
Westerns.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are carriages just like careening, like doing flips and
piling into each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Call of Juarez.
And then before that, there was a scene where you go to your house and you're going home to find mom.
That's weird. It kind of turns into The Sims and you can buy furniture. I didn't know where it was going with this. But.
Anyway,
Call of Juarez nightlife. Right. Weird. But then after that, there's quick draw. This is actually the sequel to Spore.
Yeah. Will Wright's Call of Juarez. Which game is it?
That's the slogan. As voiced by the Simpsons teen.
Right,
yeah. Exactly. Oh, geez, Call of Juarez. Will Wright's Call of Juarez. Rated RP or whatever.
RP.
I guess this game
that's
is
the
not
final
rated.
Rating. Yeah. Yeah. The board just couldn't figure it out. Like, we don't fucking know either.
Rated E to AO. What? Wait, what? Anyway.
Yeah. So that's Call of
Juarez. That sums
up. Yeah, I didn't expect that at all.
Way to go.
Interesting.
They're just, yeah, it's just,
you know,
a big...
what you say actually though does speak to a fairly endemic problem to video games, which is that they're pretty much incapable. Well, I shouldn't say incapable. They very rarely address different genres in what?
The second time you've done that. That's the, God, the one thing, or what did you
well,
say?
Well, I don't want to be
like,
too absolute.
I don't know.
Like, I don't,
it's a big
know.
Thing, and this time it's like, that thing, the game's a thing. Like,
well,
you keep,
I just,
keep
you know,
just
wanna,
issuing these extreme
I
statements.
I want to hedge my bets. Someone, I don't, you know. It's this way I can claim
right.
I'm never wrong. you know, it's really difficult, I think, for games to accurately reproduce most genres, really, other than action, because as soon as, you know, like a Western game, most of the time the developer's just going to fall back on the same mechanics you used to play another game with a gun in it. Like a sci-fi game, you're pretty much just going to end up making same shooter or the same RPG, but there's a spaceship in it. Like
there are some things that they try to do. Like there's a cover system in the game, and it's an automatic thing. You go up to a box
the cover system was the thing I was going to throw out as a joke before you said bullet time.
Oh, God.
I mean, cover is becoming sort of a cliche, a game
it's
design
a cliche. But it does sort of work for the style.
I mean, it makes sense
Western
in a Western
game. It makes sense.
Yeah.
Your guy automatically you sort of rock the mouse and he sort of peeks out automatically as you, go up and down. It works most of the time. There are some instances where you slip into it and you didn't really want to.
Jake is writing down potential episode titles here. See if you can figure it out.
Rock the mouse.
You already know.
You
want
to read
the
ones I've got so far?
Yeah, sure.
So far we have The Cane of Lynch, This Crazy Robot, and Rock the Mouse.
you, dear readers, already know which of these was chosen. We don't. Yeah. It's like you're in the future.
Anyway, so you rock the mouse.
You rock the mouse. And
rock the mouse.
Anyway. On Teen Disney.
Like, yeah, right, exactly. No, but that's an interesting choice, though. I mean, at least it's a different take on cover mechanics.
Like I said, there's some things they're doing with this game that I appreciate, and I think that were smart decisions. But overall, I just feel like it's, you know, they threw those interesting things into a just general bullshit shooter.
Right.
And it kind of made me sad because there was potential there. But
it's just
so much goddamn shooting.
That describes how I kind of my reaction to Gun, if you guys played that. I may have talked about this on the podcast before. But
I haven't played it, but I've heard a lot about it.
It was made by Neversoft, the Tony Hawk guys. Yeah. And it this was back right around when Tony Hawk was becoming increasingly unbearable. And it started off with just one of the most promising, awesome introductory sequences I've seen in a game in a long time.
The thing
time.
With you and your father or whatever?
Yeah, who's played by Chris Christopherson, who did an amazing job.
That's cool.
With, like, excellent, I mean, as you'd expect, sort of gravel-voiced, you know, old-timer. I mean, he was just amazing. Like, he did an incredible job, and it put me in, and the world looked really nice, and the game had this great sort of movie-style opener, which I thought actually worked really well, where you're introduced to this, the basic setting and premise of the game and your father and this whole world. And then the camera kind of, it's very simplistic. It does a nice pan up over the environment. You see this very classic Western setting with hills and a river and like a steamboat, I think, in the background. And it's just an amazing soundtrack, really great soundtrack that isn't just complete Ennio Morricone ripoff. Mm-hmm. Like comes up and then the main title comes in, just stark white text, no like crazy stupid logo treatment.
Awesome.
I mean, it was just a very elegant opening, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this is going to be awesome. This is going to be a sweet, rad, like Western experience. And then you get into the game and you start shooting guys, and it's like combo chain times two. Like Tony Hawk is here, like grating you. Like what?
That was one of the things I wanted to say about Cold War is the music is just it's generic shooter music. Like there's like a little Western flair here and there, but it's just,
is there an electric guitar? Like with distortion?
No, there's no electric guitar. It's kind of like Call of Duty music, I guess. It's got that sort of horn heavy,
very generic.
I don't want to. Yeah, I haven't played enough of the game. Really,
stuff, yeah.
There may be some Western
stuff. That
stuff
in there, is the scourge of game audio at this point.
In fact, that may have been simply for the military levels. I don't know. You know, it may get more Western-y, so I don't want to judge the game based on that. But it sort of disappointed me because it was one of those things where it was playing throughout the whole level and just did not match at all what I was doing. You know, I mean, it just felt so out of place. There were just a lot of missed opportunities. I don't know.
Yeah,
kind of
know
like a half-hearted effort
about trying.
What?
Oh,
just doing the 20.
We were talking about trying.
Oh yeah, for sure. I did like trying.
Yeah. So that's all we got to say about trying. I think we're going to take a break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come back. Talk about some trying.
Yeah.
Video game.
Remember that time when you used to write songs?
Yep.
Trying.
Video game.
We're back.
All right. So,
video games. Oh, yeah. God,
man,
we couldn't stop talking about it during the break. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Said some really interesting things about
trying.
Yeah, I agree. Trying.
Trying.
Yeah.
So, Nick, what do you think about Civilization 4 and trying?
Well, trying's really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Trying.
Yeah. Civ 4 is.
Yeah, speaking of trying, you were playing some Civilization 4.
So, yeah.
No, but I did want to talk about Civ 4 a little bit.
Yeah, no, you definitely should.
Because that game is pretty much destroyed my life out of nowhere.
Right.
Which it seems to do
every
couple
attack
of months.
Like here,
it just comes out of, it's just really, oh god, that game. I really think it's one of the best, if not the best game to come out in the last decade. I'm increasingly convinced, and I hate to place games like that, but I am just, every time I play it, I'm just more blown away by it. I guess when I say best games, I'm talking about...
You're talking about best 10 out of 10 graphics, replayability.
Wait, hold on. We're getting arrested. I just wanted to toss that in there. A guy wrote us in and said, whenever he's driving, he always gets really freaked out when the ambulance noises or police noises come on. And so he appreciates when we joke about it so that he immediately knows he doesn't have to pull over.
We were just killed when 1,000 cop cars piled on top of us.
Yeah.
Anyway, Civilization 4.
In a Civil War recreation.
Right. In a sort of physics-based platformer where you can choose between three controllable characters.
Trine, I think, is what you're discussing.
Yeah. So anyway, back to Trine. Yeah.
So back to the best game ever, Trine.
Yeah.
Civilization 4.
All right, so continue. So,
Yeah, no. When I say game, I don't mean video games. I'm talking about.
I'm talking about life.
No, I'm talking about a game as in
like a system.
A system, right?
As opposed to like a interactive narrative per se. Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
It is just God.
We're getting hardcore arrested now.
Yeah,
man.
We're up to four stars. It's Blues Brothers. They're piling up.
But no, I know what you mean. You basically mean a game where essentially the computer is playing by the same rules you are.
Yeah.
Whereas tradition, like
a simulation, I guess. I mean, not always really, but in this case, it's anyway.
Sort of know what you're saying.
Yeah,
yeah. I think most people know what you're saying.
It's just it's incredibly addictive. But beyond that, I think it's just doing some. It just does some really amazing things. I was playing through it, and I sort of got to a point where. I simply could not beat the noble difficulty. People who haven't played it, there are maybe 7 or 8 difficulty levels, and they get insanely difficult very, very quickly. Like, this is a very difficult game. In fact, I don't know, you know, it's very easy to see how Civ Rev got made, because anybody who plays Civ 4 will look at that game and go, holy shit, like, the average person would not know what to make of this game. Like,
How high is Noble on the 7 difficulty scale?
It's funny.
It's like 4 out of 9, maybe. I think it's more than 7.
It's like 11 out of 217.
It's pretty low. To put it in context with all of the AI plays at Noble. I mean, it's a handicap system, essentially. Okay. And so... It's just putting you on par with the AI, and God almighty, like, that is just, it's just so goddamn frustrating when you're at that level where you can completely demolish everybody at the lower difficulty level, but the one just above that, you get just totally fucked. Like, there's just no way to get past it. But some interesting things happened when I got to that level. Because I realized
Have you crossed that threshold now?
I just today.
Oh man!
Sort of like managed to survive long enough.
When I messaged you on Steam, you're in the midst.
My real solution was to sort of end up on a continent where it was just me and this other Civ.
Was that the Antarctica one?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's crazy. Because you were saying yesterday, you were like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, Sid Meier! Now you've put me on this shitty island.
Yeah.
Now I'm never gonna beat this game." And that turned out to be the secret. Sid Meier is smiling down on you.
He is. It's one of those games where
you're welcome.
it's weird
that's
because
how it sounds.
You know, there are ways to sort of game Civ where the game has a seed and it starts everybody out at a certain position and. The AI is going to react a certain way, and you know, you can load games up or you can just start a game over and get a better position where you're starting on the map, get different maps. But it's interesting because the player then has to sort of make a decision to sort of stick with it, even when they know they're screwed.
Right.
You know, because it changes every time, and just the difficulty level has no impact on whether that map is going to be
advantageous
advantageous to you. I started out on this, you know, just terrible situation where I was stuck in this like Antarctic island at the bottom of it, you know, like there was, you know, there were like, you could just sort of see in the distance that, you know, there's like a tropical section to this continent, but like I was stuck in the, you know, like
the polar
Viking
region.
But I was only there with one other guy, so my, you know, the way that I solved this problem was just basically banding about 20 dudes with clubs, like the least powerful unit, and just sort of march to the city gates.
Beat up a guy with clubs?
Yeah, basically. Like
you were saying you had like an army of guys you just...
It was like you're like 4,000 BC. I was just like, oh, let's go get them. You know, just like...
Yeah.
You
were Genghis Khan, like ahead of your time,
basically.
Which is sort of like a sad reflection of how good I am at Civ. The only way I can win is by just beating a guy with a
club.
It's
the equivalent of an SCV rush, you know, in StarCraft.
Yeah. It's the cheapest thing you can do, but it actually worked. And so I had that
Also, you can't really criticize that strategy. I mean,
it's totally valid. Like, in fact, I'm surprised it worked, because typically when I try and do something like that,
History will bore this out time and again. Bore it out?
We'll bore it out, yeah.
Bore.
But I mean, there's certainly historical parallels, you know. I mean, just the idea of just overwhelming the enemy with inferior troops is not at all.
And that's why Civ is so brilliant. That's why I'm trying to build to this, but the parallels in every instance, you know, if you lose, if you win, if you're just sort of middling, it's just amazing to look at it and go, you know, I can see what civilization I am. Like, I can make direct comparisons to historical, you know, events.
Maybe not with fighting battles where a spearman can take down a tank, but...
Well, that doesn't happen in Civ 4, but they sort of fix that by Civ 4. But that's always kind of ridiculous. When you get like a musket man and you get taken out by a dude with a bow.
Yeah. They unfixed that for Civ Rev. It's really funny because Civ Rev was the most recent Civ game that I played a lot of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hilarious how breakable it is compared to the other Civ games. Or I guess the more recent ones anyway. Like, I mean, I remember having a difficult time with the highest difficulty level in Civ, and I even posted on my blog about it because I was so frustrated at the time. Except the difference was in Civilization Revolution, that was the highest difficulty level. Mm. Whereas for you, it's like 4 out of 9 on Civ 4 because that's what kind of game that is. But then I remember you can kind of solve Civ Rev like in a way that you can't solve the other ones as cleanly, to the point where you can just sort of figure out what works and then just sort of do it. And there's kind of a thing that you can exploit with almost any civilization. If you're the French, you just go culture crazy and you can just start taking over enemy cities like almost instantly if you just put all your shit into that. I mean, it's like the opposite of Civ 4 in a lot of respects. Yeah. Like you can just sort of choose one thing and just go with it to the exclusion of everything else. And if you are successful enough in that category, you can basically just dominate.
Civ 4 gives you, you know, sort of like an extra unit here or
a bonus there. Yeah.
And it does sort of make, you know, if you're the Greeks and you've got a phalanx unit, you know, then maybe that's when you want to start your shit, you know, start your wars. But other than that, though, I mean, it's such a complex system. But that's why it's so great. I mean, you never really know what's going to happen. But the sort of the revelation I had was that, you know, typically what happens with me at Civ, I do sort of get stuck on that lower difficulty level, and I just end up, you know, being, you know, about, you know, 1500 AD, I've got this gigantic empire, and I know exactly how I'm going to win, and, you know, it's fun to a point, but then it just becomes an exercise.
Right, of course, yeah.
But in the past, you know, the alternative is just, you know, basically being screwed. You know, once you get stuck in the middle of the pack, you've got, you know, like an American Empire equivalent, you know, just sort of taking over all the, you know, research and just blowing you away. And it doesn't seem as fun. But the revelation I had was that actually it kind of is more interesting and really fascinating to just sort of stick with it and not worry about being that top guy.
Not do the quick load.
Well, which is what I always did. I always, you know, just fucking cheated as much as I possibly could because it was just so frustrating.
So
when
you're actually getting into the sort of weird life simulation aspect of it instead of top dog.
It's the equivalent of like doing a hardcore mode in a shooter or something, you know, just like sort of sticking with it.
There's some guys doing that, by the way,
I know, with Far Cry 2. Yeah. That's sort of what I was making a reference to.
There's a couple guys who are Far Cry 2 back on the game list. You thought it was gone.
Yeah.
I think three guys right now who are, it's really cool. They're doing run throughs of Far Cry 2 where they're essentially playing the equivalent of Diablo hardcore mode, where if they die, they're done and their game is over.
Yeah.
There's no obviously built-in support for that in Far Cry 2, but they're just saying the first time I die, that's it. I have to start over or stop playing. And it's really cool. I mean, it just introduces, they're tracking on their blogs. I'll put it up on the, now that we're actually for real, linking stuff we mentioned.
Oh, yeah, the Idle Thumbs downloadable content thread or whatever.
Right, exactly. If you go into our forums, if you go into the episode forum where we have all of our per episode posts, there's a separate thread now that is just devoted to all the stuff that I always say we're going to link and then we don't actually. And if I forget something, just tell me in the thread and I'll put it in there. So yeah, I'll link these guys. They're guys who are kind of in the sort of, I don't know, there's this weird small community of people who sort of comment on game design and sort of comment on each other's posts and reply to each other on Twitter and stuff. It's sort of this weird little group. And actually, Clint Hawking.
Who are these three guys?
Oh God! One of them is one of the guys we met at GDC, Nels. I don't remember all their names, unfortunately, because I'm horrible with names. But and Clint Hawking is also already kind of in that group anyway, and it's his game, and so it's been an interesting kind of back and forth.
He
addressed it on his blog too.
Stuff, yeah.
So that's cool. But anyway, Nick, please continue.
Right. Well, I don't know. I guess what I wanted to say mostly was that what makes Civ 4 so brilliant is that you get to these, you know, situations where you're not the top guy, and it you know, it's very easy to sort of, you know, play the game and just sort of, you know, when you're doing diplomatic things and just kind of playing it and just not really thinking about, you know, how it applies to what it's trying to simulate. I mean, it's essentially trying to simulate, you know, a way that, you know, politics and religion and all these things impact. And it's cute in the way that you go, okay, well, you know, the culture impacts the boundaries and things like that.
Right. How can I leverage this?
But when you actually sit back and think about it, it's doing it to a degree that is really impressive. I mean, it actually, you know, when you think about the scenarios that are generated, it does apply fairly well to historical, you know, precedent. And it's just fascinating. It's like when you are in the middle of that pack and there's a guy, you know, there's a civ that is basically dominating in research and in resources and all. The interactions that you have, you know, the diplomacy, you know, everything about that is sort of accurate. He's, you know, you're completely subservient to him and you're trying to make these deals with other civs.
Right.
And you know, the way that religion works in there, you know, if you're a civ that is Jewish and everybody else in the world is a Christian religion. Like last night, I was just sort of minding my own business, and all of a sudden, four civs just declared war on me out of nowhere, man. And I had no idea. I was like, "What the fuck? Like, what did I do?" I was just like,
was this
minding
a screenshot
my own business.
You posted?
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
I had no
you describe
idea.
Describe the screenshot
and post it in the downloadable content thread.
Yeah, it's basically just you gained 40 gold, blah blah blah, and then. So and so declared war on you. Hatashmut declared war on you. Just a list of just like five or six civs that declare war on me all in a row.
And then at the very bottom it says autosave.
Autosave, yeah. So that's fun.
It's hilarious.
But and then I discovered that it was because I had gone against the grain. I was, you know, just not a Christian religion, and so they just out of religious disdain.
I mean, that's an interesting thing to emerge out of that system.
There are other. There are more subtle things too. You know, just the way that war fatigue factors in. You know, when you're conducting a war and your cities sort of react to that. And then, you know, the research and the balance between, you know, the resources that you're inputting into certain, you know, there were more than a few times, and I wish I had just written them down because my memory sucks, but, where I went, my God, it's just like, you know, this, or it's just like, you know, this is just like, you know, the Iraq war, or, you know, I mean,
right.
Not such, you know, not in superficial ways, but actually in fairly,
in sort of
ways
to speak more to the underlying trends and, not trends, but sort of underlying dynamics.
Yeah. It's just a really impressive simulation, like beyond what you. It takes a lot of rounds, I think, before you sort of get past trying to beat the game and sort of you know
allow
you
yourself
with Civ,
to operate
so
the way a real civilization actually operates.
Yeah. Right. But once you do, it becomes a really, really interesting system. And then, you know, I mean, the soundtrack, I think, is probably my favorite soundtrack.
Is awesome. I agree.
My favorite soundtrack in a game that is not original by far. I mean, it is fantastic. Just, it is really mind-blowing how, I mean, it's...
What's the soundtrack to Civ 4?
Well, I mean, it's pulling just amazing music from every
era.
Oh,
era.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The modern era is all, you know, John Adams kind of very minimalist classical stuff. It's amazing. And that just, you get into this mode where you're hearing that music and you're, you know, things are happening. And then at the end, of course, it shows you that timeline of everything developing and the graphs and things. And it really, I don't know, it's just a fascinating game. It's just, I'm just constantly impressed by it. Like more than I just sort of assumed that it was just addicting because of you know basic stupid things like, you know, I just like winning, but it's really
that's what King's Bounty is. I can talk about that in a
minute. You know, but it's addicting for a different reason, because it's so interesting, because so many different things
it's genuinely compelling for real reasons instead of just when people say compelling and they just mean I want to play it.
And I question whether a game like that will ever be made.
Yeah, what I was going to ask again is that the most recent one, CivRev, is probably not like that.
No, it's not at all like
that. And
no.
I mean, is there going to be the equivalent of a Civilization 5 at some point?
I'm pretty sure there will be. Civilization 4 was extremely successful for 2K.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if there were not a Civilization 5. And actually I was going to say I wonder what it will be like. I mean, I think there will be one unquestionably, but I wonder what direction they're going to go.
Whether they'll streamline some of these things. And
I mean, I would like to see them just make a sequel to Civilization Revolution and then make a sequel to Civilization 4. I mean, both of those games were extremely successful, but probably to fairly different audiences.
Right,
I mean,
just spin CivRev off into its own separate...
Yeah, because CivRev could be, honestly, like, I actually enjoyed that game, but I think it could be a much better game. I mean, they could make that a much better game without making it like Civ 4. They could make that game way better just by improving certain very breakable design choices, and also just honestly some fucking horrible just interface stuff that just, you know, from a pure polish perspective, if they just did another one, they could just make that stuff better. But there's no real point making two of those games at the same time. It would be nice to see them actually keep those divergent paths.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if they will. But actually, one thing I wanted to... We've probably talked about this already more than any other game in this podcast. But
I'm trying.
It's really interesting. I'm glad you talked about it. And inadvertently, you've sort of, in my mind, created a rebuttal to something the Rock, Paper, Shotgun guys were talking about on one of their podcasts. I have no idea what episode this was. Yeah. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I do listen to theirs because I like their site. And they were saying... I don't think any of them were actually really into Civ 4 or Civ in general. They were all saying they could never really get into the series. And one of the reasons one of them cited was that, and I don't remember who it was, but they all agreed anyway, was that you don't really have a sense when you're playing the different civilizations that you're actually acting as that particular civilization. There isn't really a sense of you know, when I choose the Spanish civilization, I don't really feel like the king of Spain particularly. Right. And I agree with them. And that's
the way that like Empire Total War.
Exactly. That was exactly what they were comparing it to.
Right.
They were more generally comparing it to kind of the
American
style
though.
Of RTS versus or turn-based or whatever versus the European style. Yeah. But hold on really quickly. Let me explain your rebuttal that I'm going to create in my mind. is that, the thing you describe is probably actually much closer to what it is like to be the king of Spain than to be Spain, super Spain, Spanish man. Like in reality, the way real
you got the
nations,
Armada now,
right? Exactly.
Yeah, you've trained the Armada.
That stuff only comes out in historical sort of hindsight, just as it would in Civilization IV. Yeah, it's just that
this is exactly what I was going to say.
So your actual king instead of wish fulfillment king. Basically?
Exactly. Right, well, your actual king instead of historically filtered king, where they melt everything down into the most interesting elements and then describe an entire civilization that way. Whereas in reality, like even in recent memory, you know, it's like, Jake, I was talking to you about the difference between the San Francisco depicted in the film Milk versus the San Francisco depicted in the film,
The Rock.
Zodiac?
The Zodiac. Those movies are set very close to one another historically. And they both depict very iconic San Franciscos, but they're also very different San Franciscos, and they're both excellent films. And living in San Francisco, it was really cool.
And they're both, I mean, probably accurate,
exactly.
Representations of that
right.
slice.
Yeah, and, yeah. Exactly. And it's interesting because it really goes to show how much history is in the telling. I mean, it really, you know, I mean, for a lot of people, for someone living in San Francisco during that time period, it could have been either like the battleground of sort of an explosive gay rights movement. It could have been the summer of free love. It could have been this place where this crazy serial. I mean, these were not all happening simultaneously,
right,
literally.
Yeah. Also,
but I mean,
what it really was is all of those things. Probably.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what it also really was people just living a normal life.
Right.
And not feeling dominated by any of those things as much as they were aware of them or engaged in them to greater or lesser extents. But San Francisco was none of those things to the extreme. And I mean, San Francisco is a city that is frequently pegged as being extreme in one direction or the other, but like anywhere else, well, not like anywhere else, like most places, when you live there, it's just a place for the most part.
Right.
And that's what's interesting about what you say about Civilization IV is that when you approach it with the angle that you have seemed to sort of are now like immersing yourself in, it's probably actually a lot closer to,
yeah.
to replicating history in a really interesting way. But what's cool though, is that it still does allow you to look back and see what those trends were. It's just, they're not
right. It's in a different order and
exactly
and
right.
different circumstances.
And maybe things that happen in different countries
yeah.
at different times are happening.
It
will
allows you to separate that sort exactly. of layer of history from
exactly
what you have in your mind as yeah. I mean, I like that concept of a seed of sort of like a, almost when you think about it, like in a sort of like a chaos theory sort of
right.
way where it just, well, you know, like you yeah. have several different factors and then right. things could spiral out this way. Or
I mean, that's what,
that
I mean,
way.
That's
it
what
sort of like, depends on.
We got dodged in here and nobody cares. yeah, that sort of situation.
that is a lot of what
cares on your skin.
Yeah. A lot of what game theory, like the sort of non-video game specific game theory is about is that,
yeah.
you know, like that kind of systems and things coming out of systems. And that's actually an area of game design that is hugely important when you're, especially when you're talking about games that yeah. when you, as you say, like games, as opposed to, you know, what I was calling like an interactive narrative or something, you know, but a game where the rules are the same for all the players involved.
Yeah.
Whereas in a Call of Duty or something, the rules the computer is playing by are completely different than the ones you're playing by. But when you're playing in a game where it's the same from any player's perspective, some really amazing things can emerge in ways that they can't when you're playing with a less sort of equal system.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting. And it's funny, I was going to bring this up last week and I forgot. It's an area of game design that is pretty much on the decline. I mean, the idea of that kind of endless system-based game. I mean, we're definitely moving much, much, much towards games with beginnings and ends.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been moving that direction for a long, long time, and it's almost, I mean, it's, on the PC platform, it's quite apparent because the PC platform used to be the one that was much more about kind of systems,
mm-hmm.
like sort of just
yeah.
systems above all else. And it still is. It's just that that's a smaller area than it
yeah.
than it was before. But it's an interesting area of game design, and I think it's probably harder to sell to people and harder to explain.
Well,
but it's
sure.
really amazing.
How would you show a trailer of what
no
we
one,
were
exactly.
just talking about?
But, no one likes chess.
Well, I suspect probably... relatively speaking, very few people do like chess. I mean,
I don't know.
I didn't know if you were being sarcastic or not.
No one likes chess and everyone likes action movies.
Right.
says official old man of this podcast.
Yeah.
Kids today.
Yeah.
But I can speak personally, you know, it is sometimes intimidating to approach stuff like that. I mean, you know, it's something like Civilization IV is intimidating to approach. And it's unfortunate because it means that it does make it hard to get people to try stuff like that. But
yeah.
but it's true that once you actually get in, like, you can have amazing experiences that are just totally unlike something that's been essentially plotted out for you. It's
yeah.
just you have to be willing to
it does seem like
put
a lot
up
of,
with it for a
lot
while.
Of the, you know, games that yeah, are like that. And I hate to bring it up again, but Far Cry 2
right.
do have that barrier where
right.
it sort of sorts out who's willing
yeah,
to go
Far,
that far.
Yeah, exactly.
You
Far
know?
Cry 2
I mean,
obviously
always...
isn't completely in that direction.
No,
it's a lot
it's,
closer
but,
to it than most shooters are.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
in that instance, it's yeah, in the same vein.
Or like Trine.
True, Trine.
Yeah,
you know, I was talking about Trine.
Yeah, it's a really good game.
Trine.
Yeah. One thing I want to say before we wrap this up
sure.
is
about Trine.
I've actually never I hadn't played the game with the Beyond the Sword expansion.
I've heard that's amazing.
It actually is. It's quite good. I mean,
what is the Beyond the Sword expansion?
Well, it's just, you know, I mean, it does what other Civ expansions do. It adds, you know, a couple of different systems and more civilizations and things like that. But it does more than a typical expansion would. I mean, it's certainly far better than the Warlords. And so if you haven't played Civ in a while and you want to revisit it, I would really recommend picking that up because it made a huge difference. It's really good.
Yeah, I've only heard good things about it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right,
although it changed the music somewhat, and I don't like that.
Yeah,
so
that's too bad.
Yeah, anyway.
I'm going to quickly address King's Bounty at less length than I was originally going to because you said a bunch of stuff that was really interesting and more interesting than what I'm going to say about this. King's Bounty is definitely one of those games where you just keep playing it purely because it gets its hooks into you.
Yeah.
And you're just like, fuck yeah, King's Bounty. I'm going to run around and kill a bunch of guys with my army. And like, no interesting historical parallels are revealed by this mm-hmm. game.
But you're a king.
But
it totally simulates being a
king. No. You get missions from the king.
Ah.
It's about, like, you get a bounty from the king.
Oh, and you get the king's bounty.
Right.
Oh, shit.
It's actually not very much about that. The original game was actually more like more about the king, technically the king's bounty than this one is, but it doesn't really have any impact on the game at all.
Fuck this.
Yeah, I know. I don't like what they've done.
Yeah.
But no, this game, God, I feel so inadequate talking about it compared to all your Civ 4 stuff. But
Nick, just I blew your mind. And then I know. Like, anyway, King's
Bounty. Anyway, I've been playing this way less substantial game. But it's
you're a waste.
Yeah, but it is really, really, really fun. I mean, it's the first game I've played in a while that has just sort of consumed me. Mm-hmm. Where when I'm at work,
yeah,
I'm just like, oh God, I can't wait to get home and just play King's Bounty. It's really sad, but it's true. and it's just one of those games where it's so long that you can do that. You know, it's not like Trine where I definitely
like Trine?
Like Trine, exactly. Where, you know, where I'm like, I can't wait to play more of that, but then, you know, I do and then it's over. This game is fucking huge. It's enormous. And I don't know how it exists. I mean, it's a Russian game and I'm really fascinated by the Russian design approach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really cool. And they do a lot of things that people in developers in the Western world frequently don't kind of have the balls to do, I think. But this game is not so much like that. I mean, it's based on a Western design, obviously, the Heroes of Might and Magic, King's Bounty thing. And it's also just amazingly polished in a way that not that many Russian games are. Not to dump on the Russians, because I love the attitude they take with their development a lot of the time. But it's just surprisingly polished and surprisingly solid. And for considering how huge it is, it's amazingly well put together and coherent and consistently enjoyable. I mean, it's... You know, I forget how much I talked about it last week, but there's basically roaming battles on an overworld.
Yeah.
And you go from continent to continent, pick up quests, and you constantly are juggling like 10 different quests across all these continents.
It's sort of more Avatar-based than I sort of assumed. You know what right. I mean? Like you have that just one character, and you're just sort of...
Right, but then you never actually fight with that character. Yeah. He's just your general right, yeah. that you yeah. go into little turn-based battles on a hex grid.
Right.
And it's just, it's really, really, really fun. And you're constantly leveling up and you're constantly recruiting better guys for your army and learning new techniques and skills and things you can use in the battles. And it's one of those games where there's never, ever, ever a good place to stop playing. That's a big part of why it's consumed me so much. Since you always have like a dozen different quests, they're always overlapping with each other. You know, you never get to the point where you're done with all the quests on your docket for now. You could probably theoretically actually play that way, but I've never bothered trying. I mean, it just seems pointless. The way I play is just I do whatever quests are immediately on the, you know, whatever continent I'm on at the moment. And there are always more that you could be doing somewhere else. So there's never a clean break. You're always getting more quests that overlap with others. And it just makes
me... So it's
not
like World of Warcraft when it's shipped then.
I don't remember.
Well, there were like all these huge gaps where you ran out of things.
Oh no,
and
it's
had
not
go.
Like that at all. I've
yeah,
never had.
Just,
I've
yeah,
yeah. I've never ever not had at least half a dozen quests simultaneously in this game. And there's some that I've just never bothered doing because I'm way past the level where the amount of experience I'd get for it is worth doing it because they were intended for, you know, level one or two guys. But it's just, it's ridiculous. I wish more people knew about it. I feel like this game is getting harmed simply because people don't know about it. It's not because it's not accessible or not approachable or not really polished. There's nothing, none of those elements are weak. I mean, it's just incredibly strong. And I think people just don't know it exists.
I didn't know it existed either.
Yeah. So you can get it on Steam. I think it's only $30. And for, I mean, if you're someone who actually, you know, who cares how many hours you're getting for your dollar, I mean, Jesus Christ, this has got to be one of the best deals you can get on Steam right now, or anywhere else for that matter. I mean, I put it like 60 hours into this game, and it still doesn't feel like I'm wrapping it up at all. I mean, it's been like 60 real hours.
Are these quests like generated, or are they... I mean,
wouldn't that be an amazing surprise? Just kidding. The game goes yeah, on forever.
No, no. yeah. That's what's amazing about it, because the enemies never respawn ever. So I've been playing 60 hours killing completely separately placed enemies. It's all randomly generated at the beginning, like a Civ game.
Okay.
Like when you say new game, then it seeds the entire world. But after that, never. After
okay,
that,
so there is that finite
so
number
okay.
of enemies and quests
right.
created at the
exactly.
beginning.
Okay.
And you have to
right.
eliminate them all.
And actually, that leads to a funny property of this game. Some areas have a much higher proportion of hostile NPCs than friendly NPCs. For example, there's a pirate continent, like a two-part continent.
Sweet.
That is full of pretty much purely hostile or potentially hostile NPCs who you can choose to attack. There are very, 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 very few purely friendly NPCs. And so it basically means, like, I'm just marching around this entire enormous country, this, like, pirate
killing
federation.
Everyone.
Killing everybody. And it's like, you sort of...
The king demands it.
And it's weird. Like, at this point, when you go
just
to
like
my...
Just, scribbling names on the bounty, just adding...
Right, exactly. Just,
you're on the list.
Yeah. I'm running up a high tab with my king here.
Yeah.
There's, like... The Isle of Freedom is the Islands of Freedom is what this area is called. And I am like a fucking genocidal maniac. I'm just marching around this.
So maybe this does raise deep questions, like Nick Civilization Talk after all.
It's like a ghost country at this point. Like I'd say, one of the ways
you last person of Freedom Island.
You can hire out.
Sorry, I'm working for the king.
Sorry, buddy. You can hire out a boat to get around if you want, and just drive. Essentially,
and
just
then you
drive
kill
it around.
The boatman as the last person.
Well, there's like other boats running around, and you can just run into them and choose to like pay them or just kill them too. And like you can just kill everyone. I mean, in this area anyway, you can kill absolutely everyone. And it's funny because I don't know who, you know, most of the time there's some in the quest. There's some pretense of, you know, oh well, these people are terrorizing or whatever,
right.
And you've got
the minions,
like,
of whatever.
In the pirate area, it's just a bunch of pirates who have sort of agreed to all live in this sort of confederation of like smaller islands. And it's like, I'm not making this better for anyone. There's no one left here.
Right.
I'm just creating a barren, empty.
All the pirates have left the rest of civilization to live by themselves.
Right.
In this,
they're like the pilgrims, basically.
Not bother other people. They're just, yeah, because you never see pirates elsewhere in the game. They're only in their pirate land. And so I'm just marching
through. We wanted
to
live in peace.
Right. We finally like decided that we could just, keep to ourselves.
You must die.
It's weird. And in fact, I still don't really know why I'm killing some of the other guys elsewhere because, you know, a lot of times I don't bother reading all the quest text. It's not the kind of game where you feel like you need to read all the quest text. It's not
at
all.
You could be maintaining the KB wiki.
Yeah. And I'll walk out. Like, there's hostile... Like, I'll be in the elf area and, you know, I'll march outside the elf capital and there's elves that I just kill. And it's like, these guys are hostile, so I'm going to kill them. Am I supposed to be doing that?
Taking a walk.
Clearly I am. Like, the game intends for you to kill them, but I'm not sure in the fiction what that means. Like, on the one hand, I'm doing quests for the guy who rules this country. On the other hand, I'm marching around killing his citizens. And he doesn't seem to mind. He never brings it up. It's weird. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. But all that said, the game is amazingly fun and well made, and I would highly recommend it.
Sweet.
Cool.
And that's Trine.
That's Trine for you.
Yeah.
Should we do some reader mail?
Yeah, we should read some reader mail.
Also,
Two
quick things. One, Brain Pipe is now on Steam. That's a game that I may have talked about ages ago. It was in the Independent Games Festival. It was a finalist. It's actually made by a few guys, a couple of whom actually work at Valve. So I think there might have been weird tension between them releasing commercial games, but they must have gotten it sorted out because it's on Steam now. I would recommend it. I think there's a demo available somewhere. Not on Steam, but somewhere else.
Brain Pipe.
It's a weird tunnel. I don't know how to describe it. You're theoretically in a brain pipe. Now it's like Res-like, except more just dodging things, less about combat. Anyway, it's really cool. So there's that. And then I wanted to mention I've forgotten Call of Juarez. Anyone who's listening who makes PC games, I'm sure we have at least a couple developers listening to this. If you're making a PC game, fucking play Call of Juarez and see what it does with some of the menu stuff where you can actually just use the WASD keys to answer binary choices and stuff. This is something I've been wishing PC games would do for years and years and years, and no one ever does it. If your hands are already always on those keys, why would you make someone move over to the mouse and then press yes or no, or move over to the arrow keys or something? Or enter, which is not close to anything.
That is a really
good
point, given that you, like on a console, you always have a thumb on A and B.
Exactly.
And A and B is yes and no. And on a PC, you might just only have a hand on WASD.
Exactly.
If that's what your control scheme is.
Yeah. Right.
I've never thought of that until I saw the Call of Juarez.
Yeah.
Until I heard the Call of Juarez.
Right. Yeah. I'm someone who, for some reason, I'm really irritated when, like, Windows or any software really makes me constantly move my hand configuration around. Like, move from mouse to keyboard here, then keyboard to mouse here, or a different part of the game. It seems ridiculous. It seems like a very basic element of user interface that you should minimize that as much as possible. So I was really impressed when the first thing I had to choose in Call of Juarez was between two characters, and it was with W and D.
Mm.
Brilliant. Fucking do that. And then just make... Or no, it was with A and D. And then just make W confirm and S deny or whatever. I mean, it's where your fingers are. So fucking please do that. Thank you. Thanks, Techland. Anyway, reader mail.
Yes.
We have a ton of mail, so I'm sorry if we don't get to you this
mail
week.
From you, the readers.
From you, the readers.
To us, the Idle Thumbs.
Yep.
That's what we're collectively called, I think. We're the Idle Thumbs.
I think so. People frequently address us as that.
Really?
Yeah.
You're one of the Idle Thumbs?
Well, they generally often say, hey there, thumbs, or hey, Idle Thumbs.
Oh, but like referring to the three of us collectively as the Idle Thumbs, like a shitty band or something.
Right. God, this might be too long. Oh.
This is another one of those.
We're reading a transcript. Yeah. this entire reader mail section was sent in.
Well, Lenny Alanis wrote in to talk about sort of what he sees as a resurgence in RTS games after kind of going through a period of stagnation, which I agree with, but I also feel like that's kind of a big topic that maybe we should wait till we haven't done such a long episode to start talking about. Also, by the way, I don't know. I hope this guy doesn't mind me mentioning this. This guy also sent a separate email about how he was one of the guys who played that old Chapter Honor Warhammer 40K Quake mod back in the day. And I actually remember he included his screen name, which I actually remember seeing. So that's pretty rad because that was 10 years ago or more. Well, definitely more. So that was crazy. Good old internet. It's a weird thing.
It's been around for a while at this point, which is weird.
I know. I sent myself an email to remind us to remind me to update everyone about the status of my crazy Lumines game that I mentioned last week. I think last week I was at when I on the podcast I had hit about 3 hours and a couple million points or 6 hours and a couple million points. By the time I got to 9 hours, 59 minutes and 59 seconds, at which point I had accrued 9.1 million points in Lumines. And then there must be some kind of hard 10-hour limit or something because the game, my game ended at that point, and I hadn't actually lost. So, yeah, I don't know.
It's like a Y2K coding right. somewhere.
Maybe just when they were doing the UI for the timer, once it had to get to a second digit in the hours, and he's like, no, fuck it.
Yeah,
I ran out of space.
It's true. I actually was wondering because it didn't look like there was enough room in the UI for a two-digit number.
Hopefully that's the real reason because that's such a stupid reason.
I know it is. But anyway, I'm so glad it happened because I couldn't bring myself to quit and I wasn't playing any other games. And 9.1 million points in Lumines, Jesus fucking Christ. So anyway, that happened. God, I'm sorry if I don't read anyone's email because I'm just not going to have time.
Just read one of them.
Santu Maki, I'm not pronouncing that right. It's got accents in it. Writes, hey, I just discovered this podcast and I'm liking what I'm hearing. Good job. Thanks, guy. So he says, I was listening to episode 29 and 30 when you were talking about The Last Express, which I missed back in the day due to some unfavorable reviews that got here in Finland, and I had this nagging feeling that it reminded me of some new game. Then it hit me, Heavy Rain. From what you guys have said about The Last Express, and from what I've read or seen about Heavy Rain, they seem to have a lot in common about the way the story unfolds, how the games are concentrated in rather small environments. Am I completely off base, or what do you think? Take care, keep up the good work, Santu.
Nick?
I can't speak to Heavy Rain. I have not really
played it
or seen it or...
Did I talk about it on the podcast before?
I think we talked about it a little bit. We talked about it after E3 just a bit.
Heavy Rain gives the impression of being way more about you sort of starting, I guess, like at the base of a tree and sort of working your way out to a very particular... You know, I mean, it seems like it's more about you bouncing from node to node along what is not necessarily a linear path, but definitely moves from left to right, whereas The Last Express... It's almost like there's just sort of a wide channel of information running, and you just have to pick what parts of it you see.
Mm. Right. That's true, yeah. I mean, in The Last Express, you're essentially proceeding along a fixed timeline, but there are many things simultaneously occurring along that timeline. Whereas, and so it's sort of like a wide river, whereas Heavy Rain is more of like a lot of little offshoots of the river.
Yeah.
There's my cool metaphor. I think if anything, Heavy Rain is... From a gameplay perspective, is probably closest actually to the previous game, which was Fahrenheit or Indigo Prophecy. It definitely feels like an updated version of that for sure. Still got a lot of quick time combat. And I mean,
Quantic Dream, and The Last Express seem to have some similar goals in terms of just we want to move adventure game storytelling forward by introducing story that can sort of move around based on what you do, but The Last Express and the Quantic Dream games seem to go about it in actually fairly different ways.
Right. But it's true that they are shooting... Yeah, it's true, though, that they are shooting for sort of a similar end goal, sort of, or at least a similar end feeling. And
just a higher agency narrative,
exactly. Basically. Mm. I was actually surprised by how constrained I felt playing Heavy Rain, to be honest, more so than Last Express. It felt like you could almost feel yourself being Shepard. Like, no matter what you chose, you could
the
sort
Last
of feel
Express,
yourself
you can
still
just sit
going
on the train and the world just flows right. by and you lose.
Yeah, exactly,
basically.
Which is awesome, I think.
Yeah, that's great.
Because it's made in such a way that you can rewind and it doesn't feel, it's not annoying.
I haven't seen a whole lot of Heavy Rain, but from what I have seen, it is always just like, do something now, because actually the world is probably not moving unless you're actually moving
and
pressing buttons. Whereas The Last Express, you want to just sit in the dining car on a train?
Right.
You can. You won't.
You can just listen to these people having their conversation. Yeah. I'm curious about Heavy Rain, but I'm hedging my bets. I'm sort of intrigued by what I played at E3, but I'm hoping it's not just a sort of fancy coding on the exact same thing. But
it's a 3-hour fight in a junkyard, weirdly.
Right. It was when I played it. God, I sucked at that QuickTime stuff. I don't like that is what that game is, the combat is. I don't like QuickTime stuff. I don't dislike it entirely, but I don't like how heavily it's used in some games. Anyway, Richard Piotrowski writes, his subject is apps and governors. Hey, Idle Thumbs, naturally, I think the podcast is great. Keep it up. Two things. One, is it just me or does Merrick Bronstring really sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger? You should definitely get him to say, I'm the governor. That's awesome.
Merrick, please send in a wave of yourself saying, I'm the governor.
I'm the governor. I'm the governor.
Stop it.
Which of those was Merrick and which was Arnold Schwarzenegger? oh, man. Two, have you guys ever thought of releasing an iPhone app, either a game or some way of alerting people that there's a new podcast out? If done right, it could be awesome. Many baboo bird noises, Richard Peterson.
I don't know if the App Store actually lets you put up an app that's nothing but here's when my podcast comes out. Maybe they do.
I don't know.
Maybe they totally
do. There's certainly
do.
A lot of stuff that's less useful than that on the App Store. Jesus.
You just called it the Game Store.
Did I say that?
Yeah, I think you did.
Well, whatever kind of store it is, there's stuff that's bullshit. Okay, here we go. Nels Anderson writes in about the permanent death thing. It was started by Ben Abraham, and then Nels and another guy joined in.
And another guy.
So there are three people doing it. It's been sort of a hilarious bandwagon thing. He writes, I actually found the experience to be quite interesting and affecting. Given the well-deserved Far Cry 2 affection on the parts of Thumbs, or at least some subset of it, I thought y'all might be interested. Cheers, Nels. So yeah, that's very cool. I'll link to that stuff.
Yeah.
Joe writes, Shinji Mikami. After hearing you guys praise Mikami on episode 32, just wanted to hear what you guys thought of PN03. It's another niche title from him, but was surprisingly good. You should check it out if you haven't already.
I didn't play that game. Yeah, being really interested in it, and then the reviews were pretty mixed to sort of middling, and I said, oh, well, maybe I don't need to play that, but
yeah,
maybe it's worth looking at.
Yeah. Sorry we can't answer that in a better way.
Sorry that
we're
dumb.
Sorry.
Let's see here. Justin Richardson writes, hey, Chris, Jake, Nick. I have a short and embarrassing story to share with you guys. Every day at work, I sit in front of the computer and do what any clear thinking individual should do. Listen to Idle Thumbs podcast. I send little emails from my work address to my personal account at home so I can check it later. Reminders and things that made me laugh, etc. So I listened to episode 31 and I was cracking up in my cubicle. I typed up a quick email to my Gmail account, which read exactly as follows. No subject. Slob shooter. Gamer grub feedback. Strategy chocolates. That was it. Unfortunately, I hit the wrong button and also inadvertently sent it to an entirely separate work department from my own. I can just imagine these people looking at the words in this email and saying, what the fuck? Thanks, guys. P.S. Keep doing what you do. You guys are the best. A new Idle Thumbs fan, Justin R. Thanks, guy.
Yeah.
And then his email ends on an interesting philosophical note. His signature reads, every man is guilty of all the good he didn't do. Henry David Thoreau. So I think we should all take a moment and reflect on that.
Reminds me how good Trine is.
Yeah, I agree. Trine.
Kill it. Didn't we get some dream emails, actually?
Oh, yeah, we did. I'll get to those. Oh, yeah, here it is. Wow, coincidence. Ahoy. Wes Martin. I like that people keep sending us video game dreams. I would like to now officially solicit video game dreams to questions@idlethumbs.net.
Yeah.
Here on out, I am soliciting video game dreams.
Yeah, exactly. That's my, FD, is that FDR?
I don't know. It's just,
or is that JFK?
Yeah,
it's a three-letter acronym president.
Yeah, it definitely is one of those guys. I love the three-letter acronym presidents, by the way. Like, I love that it's such a ubiquitous thing that newspapers can just reference FDR or JFK. I think that's actually pretty rad.
Yeah.
Anyway, dreams.
He always makes TR sound
send
little,
us your dreams.
Yeah. TR, yeah, he's missing it. Yeah.
Just kind of, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, do send us streams. And I, you know, preferably real ones. I don't know. I think it would might get stupid if people start just making them up.
Yeah, please just only send us one if you have a dream to questions@idlethumbs.net.
Right.
Also send your regular reader mail to questions@idlethumbs.net.
Exactly. This guy...
dreams.
His dream is... I had this dream when I was 7 years old. It was so terrifying, I still remember it. I was at my elementary school just sitting around at recess. Suddenly, everyone's voices are replaced with text bubbles, and it makes that blip sound that occurs during the briefing to bad dudes. Everybody's head rotates to look at me. Even for the people who weren't facing me, their heads spun around, and they all yelled in unison, "Are you a bad enough dude?" The school bully then approaches me and proceeds to beat the crap out of me with charged up punches. Oh man, I like that they're charged up punches.
Yeah.
It was horrible. I was getting ready to die. Oh man, this is great. I was getting ready to die when a 10-foot tall Ronald Reagan descended from the clouds. He destroyed the bully with Dragon Ball-esque fighting moves and then turned to me and said, "Let's go get a burger." I had been playing Bad Dudes for hours before I went to sleep. You know what's funny about that to me is that Bad Dudes is about, are you bad enough to rescue the president? And then the president came in, but I'm pretty sure when that game was released, George Bush was the president. Am I wrong? Like, when did that game come out?
I don't know.
Yeah, did Bad Dudes come out 88 or earlier?
I thought it was 88 or like 89 or something.
Maybe in his mind, Reagan was still the president.
I know. That could be funny. I mean, you know, at that age, like, you don't give a shit who the president is. So, I mean,
it's just the guy you've seen on TV.
I remember speaking of presidents.
Also, I always imagine the president in Bad Dudes to be Ronald Reagan for some
reason. Really? Yeah. Oh, maybe.
Yeah. Or just sort of a weird sort of cartoon amalgam of presidents who look sort of like the Smiler from Transmetropolitan or something. But probably Reagan.
Yeah. All right, so that's a good dream. I appreciate that. What else do we have in here? What's our time?
We're over, but just keep going.
Glenn White writes, "Hey, Thumbs, this goes back to the topic of games affecting real life. A few weeks back, I was fast asleep." Oh, this is a dream thing. Should we save this or should we just read it?
No, let's just go with dreams. Right.
"A few weeks back, I was fast asleep in my house when I was woken by screaming and then very loud crying. I was very, very scared, and in my half-asleep state, I knew it was a witch, presumably from Left 4 Dead.
Yeah.
My girlfriend was woken up by the loud crying and went to turn on the light. I grabbed her hand and said, 'That will startle her.' And then," that's awesome. "I then realized I do not live in Left 4 Dead. On actually waking up, it turned out it was a drunken girl crying outside of my house." Wow, that is fairly fucking creepy. So yeah, it actually was a real thing. And like,
that's the worst.
"For a while, I was very scared that zombies were real. Keep on blasting pods, Glenn. P.S. Right, left, more men." Oh, man.
Whoa.
There's two Merrick Bronstring references in reader mail this week.
Yes. Wow. Extreme.
Right, left. I really like this dream. That's a really good one.
Icebox? No?
Oh, yeah. We have an Icebox email.
yeah, from Icebox's Tech Corner.
Yep. You may remember. God, I'm skipping so much email. There's way too much email this week. Keep sending it, though.
We're sorry that we hate your email and don't read it.
Yeah, we just don't have time.
We assure you that we read every mail.
We do. We do read every mail. Yeah. Or at least I do. I think Jake does, too. Yeah.
I hate all your mail. Especially you, Icebox.
Oh, man. What the fuck? Burn.
Nick Arbitrage.
I'm kidding. I just...
All right, so Griff Icebox Rousseau writes, oh man, he starts his email with Griff Icebox Rousseau writes. So I didn't even realize that when I said it. I am horrible.
Anyway, Griff Icebox Rousseau writes,
yes. "Hello, Idle Thumbs. Icebox here with a question squarely aimed at Jake Rodkin."
Shit.
Oh man, here we go.
I forgot that's what this email actually was. I just remembered that Icebox sent us something.
Ever since I was young, I wanted to in some way aid in the creation of adventure games. After playing the likes of Curse of Monkey Island and Myst, not to mention more recent endeavors like Samurai 2 and Telltale games, I've become infatuated with the notion of crafting this particular style of game." Jake is freaking out. "Game stories, puzzles, and meaningful interaction. My question is this. What would you recommend for a ground-level student with no idea where to study or what to apply for this kind of development? What subjects and classes should I try? Obviously, it's too early to tell, but should I try to achieve a position at a studio like Autumn Moon or Telltale? Start my own indie studio? How would I go about it? What I'm hearing is that a lot of industry journalists are bailing on the pointless new games criticism." Wow. Kieran Gillen just got fucking burned right there.
Yeah.
Didn't even get the name right. "And instead going on to actually design games. Is it reasonable for me to dive into journalism and hoping to eventually accumulate the skills necessary for development?
Not with an attitude like that. I'm sorry.
Or do I need a rigorous background in something like architecture or computer science to even think about designing for the industry? I look forward to hearing your thoughts. Keep casting and blasting, Icebox Griff." So Jake, as an accomplished adventure game professional, what do you say?
Oh, that email made me extremely uncomfortable because my answer to that is, I have no idea. I will say, the pointless endeavor of games journalism is actually what got me my job at Telltale Games.
Hey!
Whereas I know absolutely nothing about having a formal education and leading to games because I didn't really do any of that. So, yeah.
I will say that a lot of game companies require you to have a college education, but don't, or at least strongly encourage it, but don't specify what it's in. Yep. It's frequently the case. Like, a lot of times they'll say bachelor degree, like required or strongly recommended, but they
won't. Also, the strength of your portfolio can end up sort of overtaking that if it's depending on the position that it is.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, college education, a good thing to have.
Also talent.
But yeah, I mean, like, it totally, I think, depends on the position. In my case, I really did just sort of, in my free time, did a lot of graphic design work, did a lot of just sort of screwing around with free game projects and stuff, and then ended up also writing for a couple game sites on the side. And that water has started dripping from the ceiling. Yeah. But all of those things sort of combine into me having a sort of passable, I guess, sort of passable portfolio of sort of web and UI stuff that I had just done as a hobbyist, plus writing for games on the internet, writing about games on the internet meant that I ended up just sort of through press events and E3 and emailing with developers. I knew people, so...
It's an in, but you have to have talent as well, right?
You have to have a skill that would get you hired at a game company. But I didn't write about games with the like express purpose of getting a job at a game company. I mean, that sort of became an apparent side effect later as just a hobbyist journalist. Like, well, I know these people, but I wrote about games on the internet because I really liked writing about games on the internet. And then in the case of Telltale, I had written a lot about LucasArts and adventure games related stuff. And when those guys were starting the company, they called me up the E3 right like a month after they had started and said, we wanted to talk to you about your thoughts on adventure games and stuff. And then I was like, oh, man, these guys would maybe totally hire me once they have an office. And then they did. Yeah. So I'm a sort of freakish, unfortunate special case. So I just told my life story instead of answering your email. Basically... My stupid advice as the dad of this podcast apparently is just do what you like and get good at it, and then figure out how you can use that to work in a job in the games industry. If you sort of try to hone your skills around how you're going to land a sweet job because you are checking things off of a list, you will be a sad person.
Yeah, you'll be a pretty miserable journalist if you go.
Also, you'll probably not enjoy being a journalist and suck at it. And also,
it may actually be to your detriment at that point.
And you'll be sad that you don't have a job in games. But just surely, if you like games and want to make games, there's something that you can do well, whether it's writing about them or being a guy who schedules shit or testing a game or drawing a picture or learning how to program. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can do. That doesn't mean anything. It's worthless. What I'm saying, everything is worthless.
Yeah. Well, and saying that,
I mean, just
there wasn't a specific path is true for a lot of game developers.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, this is a conversation that's probably been had a million times in the world. Chris is looking at the clock and he's going to freak out.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. I don't know. Video games. It's fucking video games.
It's true. That's what it is.
I guess you can get a degree in making a video game at this point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like people who I know who are game designers have come up from QA to production to game design, have come in straight out of at game design degrees or like film school or hobbyist or level design or even art. So, you know, you don't need a degree in programming or architecture or any other tangential thing. You just... Also, if you're the sort of person who's predisposed to just make complete things yourself, make a video game.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
That's my goofy advice from a person who really doesn't know and just looks around at what other people are doing.
That's
so,
okay.
So, that's how that works.
Do something, though.
Awkward, long email.
Yeah.
Also, if you have an interest in becoming a games journalist, don't bag on games journalists in an email you send to a podcast hosted by two professionally paid games journalists.
Yeah. That's okay. I don't care.
I know. No one cares. Also, that was Icebox's Tech Corner.
That's true. So,
God. Sorry. That's okay. That was a horrible answer. Sorry.
No, it's fine. I thought it was fine. It was accurate for a lot of people. Tom Bryan writes, Bioshock 2. I just watched a thing on Bioshock 2, and out of nowhere I thought, wait, isn't playing as a Big Daddy in the next Bioshock a bit like playing as Pyramid Head in the next Silent Hill? That's kind of dumb. I like your BOD blast. It's funny sometimes. Tom Bryan, Manchester, England. I like that he included where he lives, like a newspaper letter to the editor.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of. It's like playing against the... Well, if you're playing against the Big Daddy from like the first third of Bioshock, maybe it's like that. By the end of Bioshock, though, taking out Big Daddies ends up being a hilarious, like, for me, it was like a hilarious 7-second affair where it's like, you're fucked. I've just set up like 18 fucking traps and, like, you know, I've got 40 bomb grenade things that I'm going to launch onto your face as soon as you walk into this room. So Big Daddy's turned into ridiculous cannon fodder for me by the end of the game, which is not very Pyramid Head-like, but I can see where you're coming from. All right.
Next.
Yeah. Next is also Tom Bryan from Manchester, England, too. This is a great email. No subject line. The full I don't know how to read this, but the full text of the email is Wizard, a reckless disregard for sorcery, which is an amazing take on a reckless disregard for gravity.
Yeah.
He did the same capitalization treatment.
But with the wizard from Trine.
Right, exactly. Yeah. I still don't know how the company that Digimon, the company that makes the AH game, thinks people should talk about it. I wonder if they ever recommended. Oh, they also wrote in, by the way. They listened to our podcast and they liked it. And they're glad we talked about their game.
Good. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks for making a cool game.
Now that I made fun of the name of your game.
Well, I did that when I talked about it.
That's true. They should release a sequel called Wizard. We would fucking talk about that all day.
That game would be made for us.
Idle Thumbs. We love wizards and the moon, possibly.
Yeah, it's true.
What? And Far Cry 2.
Yeah. Mark Payne wants to know, what do you think about Hearts of Iron 3? That's right, war. Mark.
War, you think?
Yeah, I like that he stuck with his typo and really stood by it. I think he just made a typo and then decided, I said,
what do you think? I want to know your thoughts.
I actually have to admit, I'm completely unfamiliar with the Hearts of Iron series beyond knowing it exists, and I'd probably be able to pick it out of a screenshot lineup, but beyond that, I haven't really played it. Nick?
Same. Jake?
Jake definitely has not played these
games. I'll tell you what I think.
Sweet.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah.
We think that maybe you should tell us why we should care about this game, because we're all stupid, apparently. Yeah. Thanks.
He chose the one topic that we can't just ramble on.
He started with War, which we could go off on for probably 5 or 10 minutes, unfortunately. No, seriously.
Mike Felix. Oh, this is good. Mike Felix says, hey guys, before I go any further, I'd first like to apologize to Jake Rodkin. When I first wrote you guys about the mental images I had of all of you, I did so thinking it would be an entertaining, all in good fun email for you and the listeners. However, in retrospect, it turned out to be a hilarious email which spawned a phenomenon which I can only describe as the Big Bird effect. Jake, the last thing I wanted was for your mental image to be dragged through the proverbial gutter for some cheap laughs at the expense of the self-confidence you have in your own mental image. For this, Jake, I'm sorry. I couldn't live with myself if I logged on to idlethumbs.com to be greeted by an article which described how Jake could no longer put up with the Big Bird effect. An overdose on a deadly combination of painkiller, antidepressants, and peeps. No, Jake, too many idols have gone out this way, and we the people cannot afford to lose another in the same senseless manner. So from this point on, I would like to strike my first email from the public record. Stay strong, Jake.
What he doesn't know is that I actually look like Big Bird, and I know people for like probably the last 6 months have been wondering what that noise is that we make at the end of the podcast. That's actually just how I talk when I'm not podcasting. So if you're wondering... we refer to it as the Baboo internally, but that's
sort of your nickname.
That's sort
at this
of
point.
Jake Baboo Big Bird is Big Bird Rodkin.
Great.
So yeah, if you're wondering, it's because I am Big Bird.
Yeah,
my voice, like the pitch of my voice, is lowered so that you don't recognize. It's
I see.
It's a sort of witness protection thing, but since I usually sound like Big Bird, it just comes out like normal guy.
That's cool.
It's weird. So no harm, no foul.
All right, he continues. I'd also like to say that I recently bought Sam & Max for Xbox Live Arcade, and it's been taking time away from playing Infamous. It's a well-crafted and funny game, which I'm very late to the party on. I was shocked when I saw Jake Rodkin's name in the credits for one of the episodes as UI designer. Even though I heard Jake say he worked for Telltale Games, I always thought he was lying. Keep up the great podcast.
Well, fuck you, buddy. No.
Man, this guy just had a Jake Rodkin 1-2 punch here.
I know. People keep doing that. What is this?
Yes. Last week was mailbag punching bag. Bag.
I'm the mailbag punching bag bag. But yeah, last week there was another guy. I was like, here's a thing that's about Jake that's vaguely complimentary. Also, yeah. Anyway, I think you're full of shit.
All right, so Brian Seiler or Seiler or something writes,
Brian Cyborg, right?
Brian Cyborg, please fix my mouth. Hey guys, thanks for the podcast. For what it's worth,
what? Why did he say, please fix my mouth?
That's his subject line.
Oh, Cyborg writes, please fix my mouth. Please fix my mouth.
On my vocal units.
We love cyborgs and moons and wizards.
Those are the best. Also, dinosaurs.
Yeah. Spacemen.
All right. So he says, hey, guys, thanks for the podcast. For what it's worth, you guys are my favorite talking on the internet dudes ever. Question. How in the chuffing hell do you make the little horn sound? By which I'm sure he means the baboo.
Oh, he
my
means...
My group of gaming friends has taken up World of Warcraft, and there have been literally trillions of opportunities to use the horn in comic fashion. Wow, what? And every time I've tried, I've failed miserably. Possibly it could be these horrible, sexy lips I've got, but I prefer to hope that you guys can use your idle thumbs to do some impromptu speech therapy for me.
Man.
Do you press your lips together and make the sound from through them, or are you honking with your lips out like a fish, or what? Thanks,
I
the original
really
silo.
About it. Right. It sort of just comes naturally. One, yeah. How are we going to break this down?
Well, I think that's worth... We're just going to get into this now. This is an email specifically about the fucking baboo.
I know. We have to address
it. It's worth talking about that kind of... We've talked about this, how... You know how in Arrested Development, everyone has the different versions of chicken
yeah,
sound?
Yes, right. Yes,
there's
yeah.
no actual correct way to make the baboo. Like, right. It is... There's a... And... Yeah, so there's no specific way. It's sort of a combination of a bird
sound...
This
is more Simpsons than the Simpsons yeah. than anything, really. Yeah.
But anyway, so there's no real wrong
Jake's
way.
Jake's is the most trumpet-like.
Yeah, it's a trumpet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell mine is.
Yeah, and Nick's sort of got a little, like, hoo-hoo element to it. Sort
anyway,
of,
do yours again, Nick.
Yeah.
No, see, I'm not really doing
that. I'm
forcing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, now that you're thinking about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, you gotta just go with whatever it is.
You gotta let the baboo come.
No, don't do it too much. No,
yeah, so we don't know. Also, why...
I'm on stage now.
We make that sound enough now that people are writing emails about it. So
yeah, it's a little weird.
Maybe it's time for a baboo moratorium.
Uh-oh. So you've killed it now.
Yeah, thanks, guy. You can just make your trillion goddamn baboos in World of Warcraft. We won't be anymore.
What a weird... Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
I don't know.
Yeah, it might be time to end this podcast. We've got some other really good emails, but we can't. I just don't have time. Cool. Well, thanks for sending in good stuff. Great. Video
game. I often am like, okay, today's the 7th, so that means it's the 8th. And then when I get to record, it's like, okay, so I'm saying the 8th, but it's probably that means it's the 9th.
Right.
Yeah.
So that fucking sucks. It's July 8th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 33. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
Are we going with that?
Yeah.
All right. Alrighty.
What, you don't want to?
I don't care.
It's hey, July 8th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 33.
Really?
And I'm Chris Remo.
And I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake.
I'm Jake, yeah.
Oh, no, I thought that was...
Oh, God.
Anyway, hi, guys. No? All right, go again.